Everybody, welcome to a Monday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Gonzo alongside. Here he's always until 3 o'clock, and then it'll be time for Christopher and Gonzo, Christopher Gabriel program, 6 o'clock. No play-by-play tonight, no coaches show tonight for Hutt, because it's every other Monday at the Elbow Room. And for the basketball team, it is coming home off a loss, as we know, but getting ready very quickly for another challenge. That will be Wednesday up in Berkeley against Cal. That is a 6:15 tip-off show with Paul and Q, and a 7 o'clock tip. The game also on Pac-12 Network if you happen to get it. But as always, please turn down sound on TV and listen to Paul and to Mark Q Jones. Football-wise, look, guys, we started with this last week, all the rumor mills and everything that naturally pop up, because we've been through this a number of times in particularly basketball, but football as well at Fresno State in recent vintage. And we even had a baseball issue many moons ago where it looked like one individual turned out to be another. I'll get this out of the way one more time, because I said it the other day and I'll say it again as we were talking. In my opinion, it is DeBoer's job. I said it's 99% sure that it's DeBoer's job. But the devil is in the details, and I'm going to leave it at that, because the guys that have emailed in and said, okay, other than DeBoer, who's qualified? We will talk about that, but it would be shocking if it's not DeBoer because of mutual interest. Let's put it that way. I think it's as sure a thing as we can possibly imagine, though I will, on the side of the you never know, talk about a basketball coach that thought he had the job here and actually was flying in to take the job, and a guy who was leaving town thought he didn't get the job, and it turned out to be the complete reverse. I don't think that's happening here. I think in 2 weeks you're going to hear that Kalen DeBoer is the head coach at Fresno State. He checks all the boxes, but you know what? It is not official, and until it's official, you always have to look at those details and say, okay, the what if. The what if there's something contractually that becomes a sticking point. The what if a P5 school comes calling, you know, the old prom date. You're going with this person until her dream date calls her up and asks her to go. Not that I would be aware of that kind of stuff, of course. So I'm just saying that in 2 weeks I figure it's going to be Kalen DeBoer, and most people do, and we talked about it last week. But there are other candidates we can discuss. So the combination today is going to be football and basketball, and we'll take you to 3 o'clock with that. And I will ask Gonzo. Gonzo, is Paul ready on the phone? Can we go do him right now? Okay, great. All right, let's go to Paul, who's on his way into studio. So if you're the transition, you know why. But as always, in the money, our good friend, voice of your Bulldogs, just back from Logan, Utah. It is Paul Leffler. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, Tony. Love these days with the clouds and the sun peeking through. And I mean, you take a look upstairs every 5 minutes, you're going to see something different. It's a big world, and we're just living in it.
I think you're right on all counts. It was also nice to get some rain because we certainly needed it, and we'll dry out a little bit. But as always, watch out for the fog. It's going to be here this time of year, but particularly after the rains. Paul, I was just bringing up the situation with DeBoer. Before we start with the football conversation, I do want to touch upon basketball lest we run out of time. Even though the team again saw one get away in overtime, I'm personally very encouraged on two fronts. One, this young team that mandatorily has to build chemistry has shown it has the requisite talent to be great. You can't, you know, the old great Slick Watts line. Donald Slick Watts was a guard for the Seattle Sonics back in the 70s. And Bill Russell, the great Bill Russell, was the coach and wanted to play slow down ball. New coach Hoppy Hopkins comes in and decides he wants to play up-tempo with a team that was designed to play slow down ball. So Hopkins says, you know what, we're going to start running it. And Slick Watts, who was kind of a philosopher of the 70s, said, coach, you can't turn mules into quarter horses, which is my way of saying if you don't have the requisite talent, you can't get anything done. Paul, this team has the requisite talent. Growing pains are inevitable, but the good side of all of this is, in basketball, if you can coalesce at the right time of year, none of this matters, which is my way of saying this team could be really dangerous come tournament time. Are you in agreement?
Well, I think that's what the consensus was leaving Logan, was that you saw a glimpse. Now, I think for the next few weeks, it's going to be, you know, do all the stars align? And by stars, I don't mean in the heavens. I mean on the floor. Do all the guys on this team show up on the same day? I mean, for instance, you look at New Williams' performance in Logan, you say, boy, if you can get an effort half of that consistently from New, that could make a difference in a lot of games. They did a lot of things well in that game. They had a great game plan. Defensively, they really challenged the Aggies to beat them on the perimeter, and Utah State didn't because they were seeing some different looks. The shots they were getting weren't the same as what they're used to. There are a lot of wrenches that Fresno State threw into Utah State's complex offensive game plan, and that shows how, you know, how astute this Fresno State coaching staff is. The fact that the players executed it and did so with precision and didn't turn it over much in, you know, one of the most hostile environments they're going to play in all year, a crazy crowd. I mean, it's always been a great crowd there. I thought the student section, you know, went above and beyond this time and maybe even crossed the line a few times. But, you know, credit to Utah State for having that kind of atmosphere. I guess what I'm trying to say is that's as difficult a scenario as they're going to deal with. And then when you look at the numbers of free throws at Utah State compared to Fresno State, and you see that Fresno State still got to overtime despite that type of discrepancy, it really was an inspired effort by the Bulldogs. Their seniors played really well. Some young guys stepped up and delivered in some key situations. And, you know, the ones who didn't do that Saturday will have a chance to do that moving forward. And, you know, I feel if Fresno State plays with the same kind of focus and intensity and execution Wednesday night in Berkeley that they played with in Logan on Saturday, then the Bulldogs are going to have a very good chance at a road win over a Pac-12 team.
You're right, Paul. By the way, in regard to the crowd, since I had so many emails about this, I do want to mention, down at Staples Center, where they call Alex Caruso the bald mamba, because Alex is thinning, of course, that's putting it kindly, They wear skull caps to pay homage to him. I would suggest that the folks in Logan, I know what their intent was with what they're wearing on their head, but I would think, Paul, maybe go to the Halloween store or whatever, get a skull cap. Wouldn't that be better, Paul, than what they tried to wear? Is that fair?
I don't think it came off quite the way they wanted to. I think there was a little, not enough opacity and a little too much transparency in the material stretched over those noggins. Yeah.
Yeah, very well said. I know college kids could be on a budget, but you could spring for a skull cap, and if you didn't see it, good for you. If you did see it, try to unsee it at any time in the near future. Probably can't do that either. Anyway, as you mentioned, they'll get a chance in a big hurry, Paul, coming up against Cal. But the other point is, before we get to football, Paul, it is the beauty of college basketball. The fact that you have a non-conference season to build a resume, or in Fresno State's case, to try to build chemistry. Then you have a conference year where, you know what, if you get it built by the time you hit conference, great. You might be the regular season champion, and that could mean an at-large. But failing that, the fact that you can, over 3 days or 4 days, depending upon your conference, get yourself to the NCAAs. Paul, it is the thing that college basketball has that, one more time, I wish to goodness something, even though football, you can't play more than once a week, that football could try to find a way to approximate with an expanded playoff. I think you and I are in agreement about that, right?
No question. I mean, it would add so much more excitement to college football if you expanded that playoff. And I think it's only a matter of time. It's going to happen eventually, but it's not there yet. And that's, I guess that's a feather in basketball's cap, that basketball knows it's never going to shrink. It may expand in the future, but it's never going to shrink, because having that volume of teams and the teams that otherwise wouldn't have a chance to have that chance on, you know, about as level a playing field as you can create, that really is magical. And yes, I mean, this Bulldog team is going to get to Las Vegas in March. If this Bulldog team is healthy, if they continue to grow, if, you know, you add Jordan Campbell to the mix seamlessly here in a couple weeks, there are a lot of things that point toward Fresno State being a contender at that point. On the other side of that, it's not going to be easy between now and then. I mean, when they jump back into conference play on New Year's Day, it's against a San Diego State team
right.
that is still unbeaten, thanks to Malachi Flynn's buzzer beater against San Jose State. And that would have been something. There would have been some folks talking about that one around the country if San Jose State pulled the upset. But Malachi Flynn's buzzer beater denied that. And the Aztecs are unbeaten. And if they get past Utah, they'll probably still be unbeaten when the Bulldogs go there on New Year's Day. So that'll be another chance for Fresno State to try to do what it almost did on Saturday, which is knock off a ranked team on the road for the first time since Jerry Tarkanian was here. I think we'd all agree that would be significant, and it looks like the Dogs will have that opportunity in their next conference game. And in between, hopefully some confidence built and some chemistry developed even further with these road games this week at Cal and Cal Poly, and then three straight home games before they dive back into Mountain West play.
Right, and I hope people get out to Save Mart Center. This team, at times, as we said, can be maddening, but they're always entertaining, that's for sure. Sometimes I may not want to use the word entertaining to talk about them, but that's what happens when you have a young team and you're trying to figure it out. But the requisite talent is there, and they play in spurts, and when they figure out a way to play a consistent 40 minutes, they're going to be very, very good. All right, that having been said, again, 6:15, the tip-off show with Paul and Q up from Berkeley on Wednesday, 7 o'clock, the tip. All right, to football we go, Paul. Look, it's not a secret. We talked about it last week. I think it's as close to a done deal as you can get for a Kalen DeBoer, but I fall back on the surprises we've seen in the past. So we're going to say it's still a work in progress, so let's try it this way. Paul, how many people do you think who have interest in this job beyond Kalen, try it that way, qualified and have interest, how many do you think might be on the list? I know that Terry's flying around to talk to people. Are we looking at 5, 6 guys? Are we looking at more than that? What's your guess?
You know, that's a good question, Tony, and I have not asked that question of anyone. I do agree with you that, you know, if Kalen DeBoer is the hire, that makes a lot of sense, especially, you know, with the involvement. You know, it's been publicly stated that Coach Tedford would be involved in the search, and I know how he feels about Kalen. I'm not going to ask him now and bug him during this process, but I know how he feels about Kalen. I know how much trust he has in Kalen. I know that Kalen was really torn when he took the Indiana job because he and his wife and their children loved the Valley so much. So if you're looking for a seamless transition and keeping the identity of the program and building on what's already here as opposed to throwing the baby out with the bathwater with a, you know, a coach who comes in cold, I think there's a big advantage to that. I think what you bring up in terms of the timeline, I'm confident that if this 14-day mandatory period were not in place, that we probably would have a coach this week because
right.
You know that every athletic director has a short list for the eventuality like this. And, you know, Terry Toomey has known for a little while that Coach Tedford had some health challenges, and you know, this has been discussed, so he's been just jumping into action. So, I mean, there's no question that there are some qualified people out there that they need to talk to. I think what the X factor of that 14-day period is, well, what if word gets around? You know, so-and-so hears, hey, they haven't hired a coach yet. Maybe I have a chance. Why don't I throw my hat in the ring? And then, you know, that forces the university to do the due diligence. They have to examine that candidate. You know, when they get an application, they vet it. And, you know, the other factor is other people can see, hey, it sounds like Kalen DeBoer is the front runner for that job. Why do they think he's so great? Maybe we should be looking at him too. So those things can crop up. And the curious thing to me, I don't mean this critically against Fresno State in any way, because, you know, I'm all for following the rules and the letter of the law and doing things the right way. It's been curious to me, though, in recent years to watch other openings in the state of California be filled in less than 14 days. And yeah. I'm curious that other institutions, even in the same CSU system, aren't following the letter of the law the way Fresno State is. So, you know, I'm not saying Fresno State should bend the rules, but maybe there should be some scrutiny on other places who aren't if Fresno State is going to be held to that standard.
Yeah, and Paul, we have talked about that in the past, talking about state university systems here that have made hires in basketball, football, et cetera, where we've looked around and said, okay, hang on a minute. How in the world did that job get posted before the announcement was made the individual was not coming back for whatever the reason, right? And I do want to clarify this because Brian Panish is a good friend, and we were having a good time with the conversation was a serious conversation on Friday, but about the 14-day window. And when I said, we have to wait 14, and Brian said, do we really, Tony? And I said, you know, you're a lawyer, and every good lawyer knows they don't ask a question they don't already know the answer to. And if the implication was that Brian knew something more than what he was saying, he made it clear on air that he was not, that he was merely saying what you're talking about, Paul, that other times, other places, there has not been the hard and fast line that there's supposed to be. This one becomes critical because of the recruiting timeline. And I guess, Paul, if any school were ever to be motivated to let potential recruits know in advance who the coach might be, it would be this kind of circumstance. But you're not going to get a public pronouncement of anything, and I don't think that Terry Toomey would be flying around the country if this were some sort of charade right now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you have to do your due diligence, and you know Terry believes that. He's a by-the-book guy, and I thought, you know, I was impressed not just with Jeff Tedford on Friday, because I know how this has weighed on him. I know how entangled his heart is with this decision. And again, just like he said, no pun intended there, but that heart, the center of your emotions, I know where his emotions lie. I know his commitment to the school. I know his love for his players that he's recruited, for his assistants. He doesn't want to see an assistant and thus an assistant's family, you know, trying to find new work at Christmas time. He doesn't want that to happen. You know, if he were in control, if he could control every detail, he'd still be the head coach and he wouldn't have any of these medical issues. But you could see how his emotions were torn. And, you know, it was impressive to see the way he handled it, to see him speak from the heart and so clearly articulate this decision and the implications. But I was equally impressed with Terry Toomey. I thought he stepped into a moment that isn't easy for any athletic director, but he did so with confidence, with authority. I think he reassured the fan base, and you know, he for a moment he spoke into his own credentials and capabilities to handle a decision like this. And if you look at his career as an athletic director, he's never had the opportunity to do this, to hire an FBS head football coach. Even though he played in the Pac-12, he's worked in the NFL, he has never had this opportunity. So it's an opportunity he's been preparing himself for a long time. And like I said, I appreciated the way he articulated it. He laid things out very clear. He didn't leave any hanging questions. And he made it very clear that it's about Fresno State and the Valley. It's not about Terry Toomey making a hire to strengthen his resume or work on his own legacy. It's about finding the right person for Fresno State that can continue to lead this program in the direction it's headed right now. And I have every confidence that that's exactly what's going to happen. I agree with you that Kalen DeBoer is the most likely choice for that position. But as you said, the details matter. A lot of things can happen, especially when you have that extra chunk of time to allow for things to happen. So nothing will surprise me. I certainly expect that Kalen DeBoer at this point, if he decides this is where he wants to be, he's going to get that opportunity.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. I also want to get to some of the emails. Donald had emailed in and had asked if the assistant coaches are on pins and needles right now, or if it is DeBoer, do they already know? Paul, without question, from continuity standpoint, and look, let's make this clear. When Teddy came in, there was an assumption all the way to the president's office that the two coordinators that had been signed to two-year deals and were just finishing their first year in DeRuiter's last year, that they would be coming back. There was a $600,000 investment total, two $300,000 guaranteed contracts. The assumption was that those individuals would stay on. But when Teddy got here, he made it clear after vetting the situation, he said, look, I've got to change the culture. Everybody on the staff, nothing personal, everybody needs to go. So they had to swallow hard, Cedar and Barstow, and get it done. So there's no guarantee, if DeBoer's the coach or anybody else, but there's no guarantee that all the staff remains, or most of it does. But, Paul, clearly I would imagine that most of the staff would breathe a sigh of relief if it's DeBoer. Is that fair to say?
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, he knows almost all of those guys. And I think you would have a lot of carryover if that were the hire that was made. And, you know, from a continuity standpoint, again, and part of it is looking at this season. Now, if you view this season as the DeRuiter era all over again, then you don't want to keep things going. Personally, I don't see that being the case. I see a team that was really close to being a bowl team this year, if a ball bounces their way here or there, and against the, you know, the greatest concentration of injuries on a team that I think I've seen in all the years I've announced the games. And with so many of those occurring on the offensive line, it really did have an impact in the way they played this year. So you get those guys back healthy, you add some new talent to the mix, and you know, you keep those relationships with those position coaches. I think there's some really good position coaches on this staff. I would expect, you know, my assumption would be that most of them would stay under Kalen DeBoer. Certainly Ryan Grubb, who's coached with Kalen at just about every stop, would be sticking around, and those two want to work together. I'm sure there would also be, you know, a little bit of turnover, because right now those guys are in limbo and they have to examine their options. And the 2 week period gives them time to feel things out. And there might be some other situations that, you know, work best for their families and their priorities. But I would expect that if Kalen DeBoer is hired, that a good number of those assistant coaches would stay on. And, you know, I think the bulk of the players would remain as well. You know, there's always a chance you might have one or two transfers. And if a guy goes into the portal, doesn't mean he's going to transfer either. I think that some of those guys are doing that as a safety move and a fallback plan, not just at Fresno State, but in other places. So I think the biggest thing for the fans, if there's, you know, anything to take from all this, it's be patient. You're not going to have a head coach till at least the 20th of December, at least not officially. And in between, a lot of people are going to be saying a lot of different things. But focus on, you know, what you can control. If you're a player, if you're an assistant coach, focus on what you can control. Trust that the people making the decision are going to make a good decision. And then when that decision's finally made, then react to it. But don't get ahead of the game and do something that you're going to regret later. And, you know, I think that's what we'll see happen. And it's going to be interesting as some other jobs get filled, if any of that has a domino effect on this search. I mean, for instance, it sounds like UNLV is zeroing in on Marcus Arroyo, who's at Oregon. Yep. Butch Jones is the name that people are talking about in Fort Collins now. And, you know, so CG would not be a fan of that, by the way. Or maybe he'd be a fan of the Bulldogs beating Colorado State in Fort Collins next year with Butch Jones. But, you know, I think all those things have a little ripple effect, but what Terry Toomey's going to do and the people that he has assisting him in this search, they're going to focus on, okay, here are the priorities. And Terry laid some of those out the other day in the news conference. Again, I thought he articulated it as well as he's articulated anything in his tenure as the AD. And President Castro was right there nodding his head. And you see that you have a president and an AD and, you know, an exiting coach in lockstep on what this program needs to be built around, what the priorities need to be. So what I know you won't see is a hire who doesn't check those boxes. You know, if it's 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5, that's not good enough. They want to see every one of those priorities met in this candidate, and I think that's what we'll end up with.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up about the relationship of the university president to the athletic director, because number one, we just saw it take place at USC. Let's not kid anybody. Bone came in with the understanding that he could hire Urban Meyer. Doesn't matter what he said publicly, privately, he felt he was going to get the opportunity, and he had a university president who had to deal, and still does have to deal, with scandal in a variety of areas at a very proud institution academically in the University of Southern California. And you had an athletic director who came in and was told he could make the choice, and then to his surprise, he was told he's not going to be able to make that choice this year coming up that Helton is staying. Okay, that was a university call. Here, and you know this, we saw an athletic director who had a basketball coach that he wanted to hire and actually had told that individual it was his job, and the university president at that time, Dr. Welty, said, no, we're going in this direction, and we ended up with somebody else. This time, Paul, I am in complete agreement with you. The decision that's going to be made by Terry Toomey is going to be supported by Joe Castro completely, because they are already in agreement about what they're looking for. That's why I think the consensus about DeBoer makes the most sense. But when you bring up being patient, I want to ask you this. From a player standpoint, because you have this awkward situation of early signing day happening to fall within that 14-day window, so there's nothing you can do about it, as opposed to the assistant coaches, Paul, I think for the players, you can say, you know what, be patient because you always have February. We still want you here. If you want to go somewhere else, fine, but we're going to get this sorted out. So don't worry about it. You're not going to, the train's not going to leave without you on it at Fresno State. But for the coaches, Paul, how much different is it? They have families that depend on them. How patient can they be if they're just not sure? Even if they're sure it's DeBoer, but they're not sure about their standing, how tough is it for them right now?
Well, I think that has to be handled on a case-by-case basis. You know, there, and I don't want to get too far off in the weeds or go into a Sunday sermon on you here, Tony, but, you know, different people view their lives in different way. Different people find identity in different things, and different people, you know, want to be able to control circumstances, and others operate out of a standpoint of faith, trusting that, you know, ultimately we're not in control and someone else is directing our steps. So, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum is going to influence the way you handle a situation like that. But I know that they trust their head coach, Jeff Tedford, who's still here, by the way. He didn't disappear. He's not in the hospital right now. He's involved in this process. And I think that is something that maybe people aren't thinking or talking about enough. It is a really unique situation. I mean, how many times can you think of where a coach stepped down, but it wasn't for a performance issue? It was for a health issue, but it wasn't an incapacitating health issue. So he was actually able to participate very much so in a search for his successor and really influence that decision. And that's what was said Friday at that news conference. I mean, Terry Toomey said that Coach Tedford would have, you know, a strong influence on this decision and be heavily involved. So that's a real rarity in college athletics. And the way Coach Tedford does everything, the detail-oriented nature of his leadership style tells me that this decision is going to be somebody that he has supreme confidence in. That, you know, because if there are questions, if there are concerns, he's going to ask those questions and raise those concerns in this process. And I'm not saying that he's the emperor and just gets to rule by imperial decree, but I know how much they respect him and how much they value his input. So, you know, if it's a candidate who he really clashes with or disagrees philosophically with on some important issues, I don't think that's going to be the person. And knowing how he and Kalen DeBoer mesh, you know, what it was that made him hire Kalen in the first place when they didn't have an existing relationship.
Right.
It was those guys connected. He said, here's another guy who gets it. He's not making it about him. There aren't these gimmicks and look at me, you know, egocentric, you know, orchestrations. It's a guy who wants to lead, wants to develop young men, has a humble but confident approach, and really has a gifted mind when it comes to football, especially on the offensive side. And I'll say had a great influence in the quarterback room too. I mean, he talked to Marcus McMarion about the influence that Jeff Tedford and Kalen DeBoer had on him, and you'll hear some really good things. So, you know, with Coach DeBoer, you know that connection is there. You know he has the blessing of Coach Tedford. Again, I think if it's someone who is in sharp contrast to Jeff's style, his priorities, his history with the program, which informs all those things, I think it would be a tough hire to make. So I think it's going to be somebody that fits in the same mold and that has a lot of the same characteristics and will keep this trajectory. Because let's not forget, Tony, this is a labor of love for Coach Tedford. It was a very, very unique situation for him to come back to his alma mater and try to restore the pride and tradition of Bulldog football, as he talks about. He was able to do that, and the last thing he wants to see is to see that accomplishment tarnished or negated or, you know, not have the sustained impact that he was gunning for. So he's as invested and intentional about this coaching search as he has been in leading this program for the last 3 years. And, you know, if you followed it closely, if you're a Bulldog fan who respects what he's done, I hope that gives you a lot of comfort and confidence in the announcement we're going to end up with in a couple weeks.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul. First of all, to Craig, I haven't forgotten about the coordinator story back from 96 that I promised you I'd get to today. If I don't get to it today, I will for sure during the week, because it is one of the funny moments when Teddy was the coordinator under Jim Sweeney. But the thing you brought up about DeBoer that was so interesting to me, Paul, about the initial staff of 17 that came in, is that not only DeBoer, but Steinhauer was somebody that Tedford did not know personally. And further, there were individuals that were already on staff that Jeff had worked with before, and yet he was objective enough to say, even though I didn't know these individuals, I think they're right for the job after talking to them. Conversely, guys he knew and were friends of his, he was able to say, you know what, I like you, I've worked with you before, but it just isn't going to work right now. And that's what you have to have, and it's why I think you will see DeBoer and you will see the continuity. The thing I wanted to ask you about, though, is do you see any similarity at all, since you brought it up, about what happened from 16 to 17 versus what you hope to see in 19 to 20, given the fact that 16 was the culmination of not only a disappointing overall 14, though you won the division, certainly a disappointing 15 and a horrific 16, versus this singular year? Is this the eyedropper in an ocean of positivity, Paul? Is that what the negativity is right now going to 20? Do you make that separation between the two sets of time that we'd be looking at around 17 and 20?
Yeah, I think they're very, very different scenarios. You know, I can't speak for Coach DeRuiter or Coach Tedford, and I consider them both friends and have a lot of respect for both of them, and I believe they both have outstanding character and truly cared about this community. I think the difference in the two situations was Coach DeRuiter had never been a head coach before he came to Fresno State, and he walked into a situation where he had one of the greatest leaders any college coach could ever have among the player ranks in Derek Carr. I don't think I've ever done that before. I've heard so many people do it, and I just committed the Cardinal Carr sin there. But
the Cardinal. If you go to the oldest Carr, I'm not talking about Roger, but I'm talking Derek. Then you've jumped the shark at that point. David and Derek are still interchangeable. Paul, close enough. 12 years is close enough. Okay.
Well, what I wanted to say with that is that Derek Carr was as good a leader as a college player as any program has ever had, right up there with a Tim Tebow type. I mean, that's what he did for that team. He willed them to win, and they did. And when that's your first head coaching job and that's happening, I think, you know, with hindsight, we can say that that probably hampered the development of Tim DeRuiter as a head coach. And I think there were things that he just didn't know because he didn't know, because he hadn't done it before. And then he was confronted with some of the things that can happen in a program. And the Bulldogs, at that point, I think, needed much more overt leadership from the head coach. And he had delegated a lot of things, and it just wasn't there. And he had a hard time figuring out how to fix it. This situation, you have a guy who's been a head coach at the Power 5 level, who also has had that learning process, seen some things that can work against a program, and has a pretty good idea of how to fix it, plus has the added investment of having played here, coached under the person who the stadium's named for, and there's that really deep, you know, in every fiber of your being, connection and commitment. And I think it's a different scenario. I think this is an aberration. I think we'll see Fresno State back in a bowl game and back in championship contention next year. And I also think, to finish that thought, to be fair, when and if Tim DeRuiter gets another chance to be a head coach, I think he'll approach things differently. And I think he will be more reluctant to delegate a lot of things because he understands now that, you know, the situation he walked into was not a typical new head coach situation. And I think he would share the same thing with you. And I hope for his sake, if he wants another head coaching opportunity, I hope he gets it. And I think it'd be interesting for all of us to see how differently it would unfold for him.
Well, that's very fair. In the one conversation I had with him after he left, I think he reflected that by saying the delegation of authority was something that he was used to. First of all, coming from the military background that he has, very used to people staying within their particular field of expertise and always deferring to the authority above them and being aware of those below them in the hierarchical structure. And I think he was someone who looked at that and said, okay, if I have empowered these individuals to do certain jobs, I need to allow them to do it. And he probably found out at the end that it's less a democracy than he thought initially with his coaching staff. And if he does get another shot, I think you'll see him be much more hands-on, particularly with the defense, which was his expertise. That having been said, one last thing. Jonathan's email, and it's something if we can address in the last couple minutes, we will. He said he was out of town Friday, so he didn't hear the show. He said, looking back, was Jaden Casey told in October by Teddy that he wouldn't be returning? Is that why Casey changed his commitment? He said, just wondering if those kinds of things happen. It can happen, but, Paul, it's my understanding, and you never say never about this, and only Jeff and Jaden and his dad know for sure. But my understanding is Casey was starting to look at Cal a little bit in the spring as well, and I don't believe, Paul, although Jeff would certainly tell somebody if he knew, he wouldn't want, that's the reason, as he said, he could not justify spending the weekend telling recruits something that he'd have to recant on Monday. So he talked about announcing on Friday, not just because he wanted the 14-day window to start so they could expedite the best they could the search. He didn't want to lie to anybody over the weekend. He couldn't do it. He's a guy who will not do that. Paul, I don't think Jeff knew for sure until very recently. He knew, obviously, the serious nature. He's known that back to 2013 and the stance in 2014 and everything. But I don't think Jeff knew for sure, Paul, that he was not going to be able to coach until fairly recent vintage. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I think that's 100% accurate. And to Jonathan's email, absolutely not. I mean, that scenario is not realistic as far as what actually happened. And I'm not criticizing the question, but just to put your mind at ease, Jaden Casey's decision had nothing to do with anything like that. That was all about Jaden Casey. And I think on the contrary, I think, well, I probably shouldn't say anything else, but that there was an awareness from Fresno State that something like that could happen and other plans were made. So I think it was more about a young man who ultimately had his mind, torn in other directions. And
back at the spring, right, Paul? I think we go that far. I think as far back as the spring, correct?
Yeah, I think coaches get a read on players. And I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but, when you know you have a really good chance, it's one thing. When you know a guy's sticking with you, you're encouraged. But sometimes there's a read you get that, someone's heart is elsewhere and that priorities are different. So for some players, that's I need to be in the spotlight. For others, it's here's what I want to study in school, and this university has a really strong program in that. So that is my dream destination. And, you'd have to ask Jaden Casey about that. But I don't think this has anything to do with that. And I think Coach Tedford, as soon as Casey made that switch, moved on from that and said, I like the guys, that I'm going to have in the future. And, on that note, if you look at it, Jake Haener doesn't come here if he doesn't think Jeff Tedford's going to be around. And, Coach Tedford is so disappointed he's not going to have a chance to work with him and these other quarterbacks next year. But it wasn't something where, Jeff was keeping a secret from everybody. He wants to be the head coach. He wants to be coaching on September 5th when the Bulldogs open the 2020 season. Yeah. He knows that's a risk to his health and to his family and really to the program. If you have a coach who could collapse on the sideline because, his heart situation's not under his control, that's a risk to everybody, and he knows that. And this, what he did on Friday, was true to who he is. It was a selfless decision. He spoke very transparently and candidly about it. That shows you that, he's not worried about appearances or he's not trying to control the dialogue. He's just saying, look, this is the real situation, and I wish it weren't so, but this is where I am. And, that just adds to my admiration and respect for him. I hope our community and everybody listening out there continues to pray for him. And I hope he's around Fresno and the Valley for decades to come and involved in this program for decades to come. And I really believe that's what's going to happen.
It was great to have Jim still here. It's terrific that Pat's still here. And it's a wonderful legacy if Jeff is able to stay here for the long term. It's great to have those individuals around, not only for their input, but it is also something that tells you how important the community, in addition to the football program, is to the individuals that led it. So with Jeff, all we can say is what we said before. He's a great friend, and all we want him to be is healthy, period. And then the future can take care of itself. Paul, appreciate it, my friend. Have a safe trip up to Berkeley. Looking forward to it. This basketball team is going to be, I think, outstanding by the time we get somewhere in February or early March. It's just the growing pains right now. So look forward to what you guys have for us on Wednesday.
All right. Take care. Tony.
Sure. All right, guys. Paul Leffler. We'll take a break. Come back a little bit more. Then get you ready for CG and Gonzo. We'll take you to 6 o'clock tonight. Again, Bulldog Basketball, 6:15, the tip-off show from Berkeley on Wednesday. This is your official home for Fresno State Athletics, 50,000 watt, 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. Just about 2:49 here, Bulldog Hour to 3, and then Christopher Gabriel and Gonzo with CGP to 6 o'clock tonight. No play-by-play, but again, Bulldog basketball coming up on Wednesday at 6:15. Also, ESPN Radio still has bowl game coverage, including, of course, national championship coverage and all of that. That's all the way to January 13th. That's how far we have to go before the national title game. And along those lines, Mark had sent an email asking about what the next logical step will be with the playoff in college football. Now, Christopher and I have talked about this a great deal. I'll talk to Cam tomorrow. I believe Cam is up with CG today about this subject one more time, and that is the ideal scenario, particularly for Group of Five, naturally would be a 16-team playoff that does approximate what we see in the lower divisions. I know Sac State just had their great year ended, but it was ended on the field of play, and that's the way it should be for D1A, the FBS stuff that Fresno State plays in. It just isn't the case right now. And in a perfect world, though, we would love to see 16. That probably is just too perfect to ever happen, at least in my lifetime. So when you want to throw idealism out the window, which is always a good idea with the NC2A, and look at pragmatism, where are we going next? Well, we've talked about 8 over and over again, Mark, as the quarterfinals for a national championship, particularly when you have 6 bowl games that all tie together around New Year's Day. So you could play 4 of them as your quarters, and then the next week you could play the 2 as the semis, and those 6 games can be in a rotational basis, and then separate bidding for the national championship venue. As I've said, that means that Jerry Jones can bid it to AT&T Stadium every single year. I was being semi-facetious when I said it, but it might be closer to truth with the amount of money that he can offer and the amount of money he can make in that great stadium in Arlington. But here's the thing, and that, as you know, would mean the 5 Power 5 conferences would all get a guaranteed bid for their champion, and you have 3 at-larges, and maybe, just maybe, one of those, the 8th seed, might be a Group of 5 school, but I can guarantee you there's no way the big boys would ever concede that being a mandate every year. Where we might be headed to, and CRISPR brought this up in one of our conversations months ago, we might be headed to 6. First, what we might see happen is, first of all, the complaint that the Pac-12 has, which I think is legit, other people might dismiss it, that the balance of the Pac-12 conference means the cannibalization takes place, and they end up bumping one another off. And we've said this, if you want success in a playoff right now, you have to have a top-heavy conference. You have to be really good at the top, but not good in the middle and the bottom. That way you don't knock somebody in your own conference off. Pac-12 would like to see their champion get in. So I think you might see, as a compromise, the 5 champions get in, 1 at-large and 1 at-large only. That could be a Notre Dame, or it could be a deserving second-place team with one of the conferences. And then you will get the committee to seed, and the top 2 will get byes, and the other 4 will play one another, so that the top 2 would not have to play any more games than they play right now, just 2 to win the whole thing. And the bottom 4, 2 of them are going to get knocked out anyway. And if the seeds hold, you're going to get right back to where you started, so you don't have extra football beyond those couple of games. That is probably where we're headed next. I hope it's better than that. But 6 might be the only concession, simply because the 5 power conferences are going to want their champions in for sure. And I think that is only fair. What they do with the Group of 5 is completely unfair right now, but the networks don't care. And if the money of television doesn't care, no amount of squawking from us meaning the group of five guys, going to do any good. All right, we'll take a break, wrap it up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.